I'm David Schreiner Khan, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep us stuck. The mission of Smashing the Plateau is helping solopreneur experts build more stable and consistent recurring revenue in their business. Smashing the Plateau is part of the Best Network, providing expert individual and team mentorship, peer support, and curated educational content that reinforces and expands our goal of the show, helping solopreneur experts get the recurring revenue they deserve. To learn more about us and Best Network, and schedule time to speak with me about how to smash your plateau, go to smashingtheplateau.com/bestnetwork. That's smashingtheplateau.com/bestnetwork. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Nava Frank. Nava is an author, speaker, and consultant. She's an expert on building an engaged network following the ideas of a thought leader or a cause. Her clients have included foundations, umbrella organizations, associations, nonprofit organizations, and congregations across the country, including Massachusetts Service Alliance, Jewish Education Project of New York, Combined Jewish Philanthropies of Boston, and Associated Jewish Community Federation of Baltimore. Nava is currently a network champion at the Community Roundtable, a premier firm that works with major corporations to make business communities successful. Her system helps thought leaders build a network of people who follow them and communicate on an ongoing basis around the ideas that they bring to the world. Nava was awarded her doctorate in education from Harvard University, and she lives in New York. Nava, welcome to the show.
Thank you, David. I'm delighted to be here.
It was great to have you on. So, Nava, as someone who likes to consider himself a thought leader, I can understand the importance of building a network of people who follow my ideas. And I'm really curious about what kind of got you into this and why you're focusing on it.
Sure, David. I'd be happy to share my story. It really begins when I was a child. I have always been drawn to community. I grew up in a very close-knit and caring Jewish community outside of Washington, D.C., where people took care of each other when families had hardships and celebrated their joyous occasions together. After my graduate training in education, I went to work for a national umbrella organization for Jewish independent schools. One day, my boss handed me a book about communities of practice that he thought would be relevant for my work. I read it and I said to myself, I want to devote my life to this field. I was privileged to meet and learn from leaders in the field like Etienne Wenger and my mentor, John Smith. And while at that organization, I started Communities of Practice 20 years ago that to this day are helping leaders adjust to the fast pace of change in education. That's one of the things that excites me about this work is just the long-term support that it provides. I started my consulting practice when I realized that this tool could help other organizations, nonprofits, foundations, umbrella organizations, associations, engage their constituents and transform their fields. Communities of practice are one kind of network, but I've expanded my work to include many kinds of networks. And now I believe that thought leaders in the business community can successfully utilize these networks to build ongoing conversations with their clients.
So let's actually start with some basic understanding of how you define a network. What does it mean to you?
Sure. So I want to recognize that there's a lot of use of that term, but I think of it as a network is a group of people that are connected to each other in some fashion that produces value for their members. By interacting, they increase value. So there are many kinds of networks. It can be a business networking group, which most of us are familiar with, that shares leads. It can be a group that has shared an experience like school or program alumni, or it can be a group of people who share a passion or a hobby. Obviously, this podcast is focused, and my work is focused on professional and business networks.
So why would someone want to enter into a network in the first place?
So I continue to see tremendous impact that making simple connections can make in people's lives in terms of building new opportunities, increasing learning, building emotional support. I recently asked a group of professionals I was presenting to about a powerful introduction or connection that they experienced in their lives. They told me stories about how they found their current job, hired their best employee, or met their life partner. You know, ask your friends about powerful experiences with networks. You'll be astounded. And as a matter of fact, David, you and I met briefly because of our networks. We met briefly many years ago, but when I moved to Riverdale, we kept bumping into each other at the subway station. Then I joined your 10 strategic partners. I've improved my sales and marketing experience, and I've been smashing plateaus ever since. And I'm looking forward to your next iteration of the best network for solo entrepreneurs to create recurring revenue.
Yeah, thanks, Nava. So what might be a really unusual network that somebody might not think of as being a network?
So I think that a lot of us are familiar with alumni networks from schools, but there are also alumni networks from programs like professional training and even the workplace. Think about the people who have worked in your office, in your organization before you or after you. Now with LinkedIn, we can keep track of all those people.
Yeah. So is it common for people to form structured or formal networks that are alumni of working in the same place? Because I'm thinking about places where I've worked, and I worked for 18 years for one organization, which is a pretty long time. And there were a number of other people that also worked there a fairly long time. So we became close friends, and many years later, I'm still in touch with them. Though it's not really through what I would consider to be a formal network. I wonder how that plays into your kind of definition of network.
So I don't think a network has to be a formal network in that somebody organized this group together, although I do see a little bit of that happening more in the field. But I think that just by virtue of having those relationships and that those relationships provide value, that you are in a network. It's not a network that's being organized formally, but it does provide value and it's there for you. And the more diverse your networks are, the more valuable they are to you because they provide access to new and novel information and opportunities. Usually the people who you're currently working with and your neighbors tend to have the same experiences, insights, and opportunities. And so you don't gain so much from that network.
Yeah, actually, that's a really important point. I don't know that I'd necessarily thought about how important it is to be part of diverse networks. I know that I personally am part of networks that, when I think about it, they are probably pretty diverse, but I don't know that I necessarily did it on purpose.
Well, you did the right thing. I can actually recommend an article from the Harvard Business Review by Leanne Davey called Everyone's Network Should Provide Two Things. And that allows people to think about some of this intentional network building.
So let's talk about intentional network building, since that is your area of expertise. What are some strategies that we can share with our listeners about how to intentionally build networks that, in particular, will help support the ideas of the group or of a thought leader?
Sure. So I think the first thing is to see your network, right? To be aware, make a list, sit down and make a list of all your networks. As a thought leader, you may not realize how many you have. And they might, as I said, include satisfied clients, you know, people who've been in programs with you. That's one of the most common errors is people don't realize the networks around them. But the second one is to really know your network. The more you understand your community and how they relate and connect to each other, the more you'll be able to engage them. You want to listen to what motivates them, what success is for them, understand their context. Think about what are the questions that people bring to you in your thought leadership and look for patterns. Two of the most common errors I see are not engaging in a continuous process of learning. There's often an assumption that, well, we did our survey last year, so we know what people are looking for. But that's really not the case. I mean, the world is changing very quickly. So you want to continue that learning. And you also want to realize that a network is not just one thing. That within the network, there are lots of subgroups. There are big organizations and small organizations. And there are, you know, some organizations that are old and some that are new and some that are expert in this and some that have this kind of a leader. And beginning to see the groups will also allow you to better attune your thought leadership to the subgroups that are within that network.
All right. So list your networks, know your network. What else?
So the next one is the golden rule. We know we should treat others as we wish to be treated. You want your followers to promote you and your work, but are you prepared to celebrate their success, share what they know, encourage them to learn from or support each other? How can you amplify their voices? Just like a little example, you know, recently I was in a network and they featured my work in their newsletter. So I sent it to all my followers. I was so proud. So that's an example of just a very simple value exchange. There's a term that was created by June Holly, one of the founders of the field, that's called complex reciprocity, which is sometimes you want to share information even if you don't know exactly when and how that's going to be returned to you. But there's a kind of a broader circle that eventually brings back value to you. And one of the most common errors I see is this one-directional communication where thought leaders feel like they just have to send things out rather than engaging their constituents and celebrating with them or partnering with them to create content. I actually have a tool that's based on the work of John Stepper's Working Out Loud that it can be used in informal email or a Facebook group. So that's another third one.
Yeah. And I will admit, since you and I know each other pretty well, and you shared that tool with me, when I used it, I got great results. People really stepped up and started to engage.
I'm so glad to hear that, David.
Okay. So list your networks, know your network, the golden rule. What else?
The final one is connect your network. And, you know, people these days are saying collaboration is the new competition. I wanted to tell a story about Rachel Happy and the Community Roundtable, which is she brought together a bunch of members from the Community Roundtable in New York. Not all of them were current members of the Roundtable. So remember this alumni idea. I met Marilyn Pratt, who I am now collaborating with, and we're planning to do a session for the Community Roundtable. So that's how the cycle works. You build the connections, and over time, the connections come back and feed you. So, you know, think about how you can bring your clients together, how you can create a virtual water cooler or a marketplace. When you give a talk next time, make sure people turn to each other and meet someone new. They're all there to hear you, so they have something in common, and you'd be surprised at what might result.
So I wondered if you could share an example or a story of a network that followed these four steps.
Sure. I think one of the clients I've been working with a very long time is the Jewish Education Project. They're one of my longtime clients, and they were the early adopters of the network strategies. They engaged hundreds of educators in Metro New York by bringing local groups together six times a year. In our work together, with their leadership and their talented staff, they've developed a successful model that's now being adapted by others in the field. So they have become leaders in this work of building a network by following these steps.
And how long does it take to start to see results? Because I'm gathering that this is not sort of something where you might see a quick return on investment.
So, David, thank you for pointing that out. I think that to really achieve the kind of, you know, large scale changes, yes, it does take time. This is a long term investment. But sometimes there you can get some quick wins. And I'll tell you one more story. The UGA Federation of New York has a Jewish Evaluation Network. That's a global network focused on connecting professionals who are collecting data to improve programs at their local institutions. They were looking to have a presence at the National Evaluation and Research Conferences. And I said to them what you'll find me saying to all my clients, turn to your network. What happened is they realized that there were a number of members of their network who were already planning to be at the conference. They were paying their own way. They volunteered and were honored to represent the network. So with strategic oversight and planning, but no expenses and no staff traveling, the Jewish Evaluation Network was present at two conferences and successfully recruiting more people for their network. So there can be really early wins that will tell you you're on the right track.
Yeah. So why do you think it is that people sometimes will not think about turning to their network?
That's a great question, David. I think that one reason is that they don't know their network. I think that, and so they really don't understand what motivates their network and what would be exciting for them. I think the second is there is some concern and fear about imposing. And I think that when you get to know people and you give them opportunities for recognition or to share their expertise or to take leadership or to learn something new, then people are really excited and happy to step forward. And yeah, I think those are some of the key reasons.
Mm. Nava, do you think that technology has changed the way networks function and the way people might behave or think about their networks?
Sure. I mean, technology makes us all a lot easier, but in some ways it makes it harder because there's a lot more competition. So it's important to really get to know your network and to remain in ongoing communication and figure out what the unique value proposition is for your network. Just like in any kind of product, you want to understand who your market is and you want to understand what their needs are and you want to figure out how to communicate with them with so many different kind of technologies and communication vehicles and social media and email. What's the best way that your target market, that your thought leader constituents would be able to receive information? And there's not just one answer. There are many ways. You want to find lots of different ways to provide information to lots of different constituents.
Right. So essentially, you've got to be thinking about what does success look like to you as the person who is either trying to build a network or tap into a network? And what does success look like for the recipients, for the people who are part of the network that you're tapping into? And as you just said, what's the value that is going to be exchanged as part of this network interaction?
Yeah, that's great. I've seen it drawn in a Venn diagram with finding where that intersection is. And that's really the strategic beginning part of building a network. I recommend you don't jump in. A lot of times people get kind of excited of like, well, let's just open up a Facebook group. But it really needs careful planning. You wouldn't launch a brand new product by just, sending out, putting out some ads. You would study it. You would think about it. And you'd think about finding that sweet spot right in the middle. So I like the way you created that image of the overlapping needs.
Yeah. So certainly these are some really thought-provoking ideas that you've shared about a topic that I think touches everybody, yet not everybody really thinks about carefully or in particular strategically. So thanks so much for running through why you're involved in this area and how it all works. It's been a great discussion. And I wondered before we close out if we could actually turn to think about an example of someone else, somebody you know personally who has done a remarkable job of smashing the plateau.
Sure. So I want to actually name two people. One is Rachel Happy, who has been on this podcast and who I'm a fan of. And the other is my client, Suri Jackness, who is the leader of networks at the Jewish Education Project and who has continued to grow and bring her networks to success. And I've been honored to be a partner with her.
That's great. Great example. So thank you for sharing that. Nava, what can we look forward to from you in the near future? What's coming up?
Sure. Well, I really want to continue to provide more tools and skills for the field to work with different groups of associations, foundations, nonprofits, and really help the field really take advantage of this and use it strategically so that they, don't make some of the most common mistakes and are really able to tap the potential to really bring positive changes to the world that follows their vision and their thoughts.
It sounds great. And how can listeners learn more about you, follow you, and if you have any particular tool or gift that you'd like to share with the audience, let us know how people can access it.
Sure. You can come to my website, which is www.knowledgecommunities.com. And I've created an assessment tool that you can download that has 6 quick questions. And if you send it back to me, you're entitled to a 30-minute free conversation where I can help you make some strategic decisions about your network. And I will create a page called Knowledge Communities Smashing the Plateau, so you can have a look at it.
Okay, so it's knowledgecommunities.com/smashing the plateau. Smashing the Plateau. Great. So we'll include that in the show notes.
Thanks.
Well, thanks, Nava. My guest today has been author, speaker, and consultant Nava Frank, an expert on building an engaged network around the ideas of a thought leader. Thank you again, Nava, for joining us.
Thank you, David. It's been a pleasure.
I'm David Schreiner Khan. Thank you for listening to Smashing the Plateau. The mission of Smashing the Plateau is helping solopreneur experts build more stable and consistent recurring revenue in their business. Smashing the Plateau is part of the Best Network, providing expert individual and team mentorship, peer support, and curated educational content that reinforces and expands our goal of the show, helping solopreneur experts get the recurring revenue they deserve. To learn more about us and Best Network and schedule time to speak with me about how to smash your plateau, go to smashingtheplateau.com/bestnetwork. That's smashingtheplateau.com/bestnetwork. We want to help you smash your plateau.